All right, I hope that continues for part two. All right, so here are our statements. Purpose statement. This is basically a mission statement. And to bring people to Krishna consciousness and membership in His devotional family, develop them to spiritual maturity, which is what we were just talking about, equip them for their service in the temple and life mission in the world in order to magnify Krishna's holy name. That's our basic mission statement. And our purpose statement incorporates those five elements, five purposes in our life. To center on Krishna. You see, we're so clever here. We started with C's and we ended up with S's, you know. Just so proud of ourselves. Because it's easy to remember these kinds of things, you know. To center our life on Krishna, and that's called sadhana. To connect with devotees in love is called sangha. To cultivate spiritual maturity is called shiksha. To contribute to the temple is called seva. And to communicate Krishna consciousness to other people is called sankirtan. Sadhana, sangha, shiksha, seva, and sankirtan. Those are the five purposes. And those, sadhana means to celebrate Krishna's presence. And seva means to demonstrate Krishna's love through other people, through the way that we treat other people. Sankirtan is to communicate Krishna's words. In other words, go out and in your school or your work or your club, just say, why don't you just come along and check it out. And then sangha, which is fellowshipping or associating or assimilating yourself into the family of God. We're all basically what's called in Sanskrit Pariva. We're all family members of God. Literally, we're all descended from God, and He wants us to rejoin His family. Some or other become, again, attached. A leaf that's detached doesn't get any of the benefits of water and nourishment from the tree. Just lies on the ground and shrivels up and dies. So being attached to the trunk, that's the root of everything, is what Krishna wants to, He wants to bring us back into that. And then educating is shiksha. So going back here, we want to celebrate, demonstrate, communicate, assimilate, as well as educate. So the first one is celebrating, and these are just quotes. These are just quotes to show each one. Either alone or in public gatherings, with singing, dancing, and other exhibitions of royal opulence, one should arrange to celebrate those holy days, ceremonies, and festivals set aside specially for my worship. We do that to the best of our ability. We're only a few people here, but we have seven major festivals a year. And anywhere from 500 to 20,000 people come to those festivals. And the dharma of each spark of divine consciousness is to dance in harmony around the central fire, Krishna, the original personality. We're all unique individual and personal manifestations. But our dharma means duty or truth, is to recognize our source, to celebrate our eternal connection with Him through loving service. In short, our dharma as eternally conscious selves is to love and serve Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Communicating, and this is a verse by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He only spoke 8 verses. Many of his disciples wrote hundreds of books. But the only quotes directly attributed to Lord Chaitanya are these 8 verses. And this is the first one. So how important it is. Glory to the Sri Krishna Sankirtan, which cleanses the heart of all the dust accumulated for years together. Thus the fire of conditional life, of repeated birth and death, is extinguished. This Sankirtan movement is the prime benediction for humanity at large, because it spreads the rays of the benediction moon. It is a life of all transcendental knowledge. It increases the ocean of transcendental bliss, and it helps us to have a taste of the full nectar for which we are always anxious. And that's our goal for this temple, is to become bigger and smaller at the same time. It's like honey. If you spill it on the counter, the nature of it is that it spreads. So all over the world, there's so many people that call themselves devotees of Krishna. You go on the internet, Facebook, MySpace, just thousands and thousands of Krishna devotees out there. So many of them. So the membership program is just a little effort on our local part to try and organize that and coordinate it a little bit better and to economize on the energies of the leaders. This is something that goes on all over the world, not so much here in Utah Valley, because it's just not something that we strategically deem would be fruitful at this point in time. Devotees go out in book tables and they distribute the Vedic literatures to people all over the world. And then educating has to do with spiritual maturity. And we need to be able to recognize that there are people that are more spiritually advanced, like Prabhupada, and that we can benefit by following their instructions. This principle is excellent in every area of life. In work, you learn from the boss, you learn from the more serious, experienced people. In school, you have your teacher, you have your mentors. And so in spiritual life, it is a fact that we're not all equal. We're not all equal in school, we're not all equal in a job, we're not all equal in many ways. So there are some people that have been practicing and who are more renounced and are more knowledgeable. And if we don't take advantage of that, we're just going to be hamstringing ourselves as far as spiritual advancement is concerned. Like we say over and over and over again, we're better together. And so part of spiritual maturity means to accept the leadership of local temple authorities and spiritual gurus. And that happened to Arjuna. Arjuna was a great, great soul, brilliant brain, power, virility, and yet he was put into a situation, a moral dilemma that completely unmanned him. I won't go into all the details, but if you know the beginning scene of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was put into a most difficult situation that anyone's probably ever been put into. He was asked to kill his cousins, his teachers, his relatives. They were bad guys, they were morally wrong, but I think you'll agree with me that there's a certain paralysis that sets in. No matter how culpable they are, it's hard to raise your hand in enmity to someone with whom you have a kinship, a bodily relationship. And yet that's what Arjuna had to do in order to make the world safe in spiritual life. And the only way that he was saved from that paralysis and that confusion was he put it to Krishna. Krishna was his guru. Krishna was his spiritual authority. And from that initial quandary, the whole 700 verses of the Bhagavad Gita were spoken by Krishna, and at the end of which Arjuna said, Nashta moha smriti roga tat prasaram stito smingatasa karishyase. Now my illusion is finished by your mercy. I am firm, I am fixed, and I am prepared to act according to your instructions. So he did that by deferring to the spiritual leadership of none other than Krishna. So here's the, we exist to, I think this is demonstrate, I'm not sure, to demonstrate God. This is God, just Arjuna was in trouble, and Krishna took no less than 700 verses to get him out of his dilemma. Krishna took care and consideration. Krishna used kindness and gentleness and persuasion and tact in order to help his devotee out. So we need to also exhibit those same qualities in our dealings with others. And that's basically the gist of this quote here from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Everybody's a minister, every task is important, and every member is one in some area. And lastly, to assimilate Krishna's family. From the Srimad Bhagavatam, this verse, one who has obtained pure devotional service, and this is God himself speaking, by association with my devotees, always engages in worshiping me. Thus he very easily goes to the temple, which is revealed by my pure devotees. So we go to the temple not just to be alone, but we go to the temple to associate with the spiritually like-minded people there, to sit down with them, to read and discuss the scriptures, to chant in the kirtan with them, to have prasadam together, and share meals as well together. Prabhupada says one must live in a society of devotees, and thus automatically one will be engaged 24 hours a day in the various processes of devotional service, beginning with hearing, glorifying, remembering, shravanam, kirtanam, shmaranam. Devotees of the Lord can reveal the spiritual world by their transcendental sound vibration, making it possible for even a neophyte devotee to experience the Lord's abode. By constantly associating with devotees and learning from them about devotional service, one quickly achieves a deep attachment for the Lord and the Lord's service, and such attachment gradually matures into love of Godhead. Statement of faith, what we believe. These are the seven belief statements in every article of incorporation of every ISKCON temple all over the world. And I'll just go through them really quickly. This is what we believe as ISKCON. This guy's playing havoc with the recording. It's going to sound like the most bizarre recording in the world, you know. I don't think we're going to get an end product today. An absolute reality exists. True success in life comes only by understanding reality and our place within it. Science gives a limited picture. Abundance evidence suggests that part of reality exists beyond the reach of our senses and scientific instruments. The scriptures of the world, Bible, Koran, Talmud, purport to reveal the spiritual aspect of reality, including God, the source of existence. God can reveal himself to us and he explained reality. God primarily reveals himself through scripture, and the scriptures known as the Vedas contain a vast amount of knowledge about God and reality. Among scriptures, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, provide the most focused explanation of God and reality. Obviously, we believe that because we're devotees. We're not negating the knowledge of other scriptures, but the reason we're devotees is because we believe this gives the most focused explanation of God. 8. Religion should be understood to mean not faith, but our intrinsic nature and eternal relationship with God. In other words, religion really means relation. It's not a bunch of rules and regulations, but it's a relationship that one must have with God. And then discovering that relationship is the goal of life, and it is possible by following time-tested, scientific, spiritual principles under the guidance of the Vedas and self-realized souls. So that's our purpose statement, our things that we believe, belief statements, and the last one is a lifestyle. Those, what, how does one who's trying to be a devotee, advance in devotional service, how are they to be characterized? What are the symptoms by which they live? Well, we're vegetarian. It's one given. You know, we don't buy into the cycle of violence and flesh-letting. We don't think that that's consonant with a spiritual life. And no guru, no spiritual master would ever be a mediator. At least we would disqualify them on that basis alone. And then temperance and constance. Temperance, of course, refers to the things that you imbibe. We don't take alcohol or drugs or even caffeinated beverages. Ideally, we don't take even Mountain Dew or Pepsi or anything like that, which has an intoxicating effect, because toxic means poison. And this is God's temple, and we don't want to put poisons into the temple. And then continence also means not to be promiscuous. It means that if you're single, you're celibate, and if you're married, you're faithful to your wife. We believe in the autonomy of the temple. First income of the month. In India, the tradition is that when you get your income, the first bill that you pay in the beginning of the month is to God, because everything comes from God. Whatever abilities or talents, it all comes from God. So we're not actually giving 10%. We're giving 100%, and we're getting 90% back, because actually everything belongs to God. And as we've said before, we just recommend that you give 10%. I mean, we're not saying give 10% to Krishna, and we're not saying if you're giving 10% to LDS, that's what we're saying. We don't care. You give it to LDS, you give it to Catholic, you give it to Krishna, but we do strongly recommend give 10% to some spiritual organization, because that without that recognition that everything comes from God and everything belongs to God, it's going to be very hard. It's an irony. I give several classes on this. That most people who are in debt, who are in financial dangerous waters, one of the best things they can do to get out of debt is start giving 10% to the church. And that sounds like a contradiction in terms, but honestly, that is the single most effective step that people can do, because it promotes discipline, it makes them think about what's important, and it curtails their whimsical, irresponsible spending. When you recognize that the number one expenditure should be to God. And ironically, even though you're taking money that you already owe, and you're giving, you're making an extra expense, that expense works magic in most people's finances, and they do get back on track with that one first step. So that's what we recommend. Give 10% to some spiritually minded organization. And then we also, our lifestyle means members are empowered. Each devotee of Krishna, you'll be amazed. You can go and talk to devotees all over the world, and people are amazed at how well they can express the philosophy and how consistent the philosophy is from one person to another. There's tens of thousands of devotees in countries all over the world, and you'll get the same philosophy from each and every one of them without any deviation. It's amazing. The consistency of it. Did I just go back? Okay, session 3, the Krishna temple strategy. We should avoid bickering with members of other religious faiths over the details of God laws. We try to see common ground, and there's plenty of it shared by the world's religions. There are disagreements, of course. We assert, for example, that the biblical injunction, "Thou shalt not kill," refers to the unnecessary killing of any living being, including animals. But even in thus disagreeing with the prevailing viewpoint of modern Christians, we are accepting Lord Jesus Christ's instructions. Similarly, we find no difficulty in accepting many of the principles enunciated and practiced by followers of Islam and other religious traditions. To put it in a word, if they would stop eating meat, we believe that you could go back to home, back to God, and from any religious tradition, basically, if you're a sincere practitioner. But we see that the eating meat practice is the number one biggest stumbling block. We don't have any quarrel with the theology. In fact, we love the theology. I love listening to lectures by Muslims and Christian and even Baptists and Evangelicals. I love it. And I used to listen to Monson and Hinckley on Channel 11 too. It's inspiring. But there's one thing that, from our point of view, will keep the gates of the heaven closed to you, and that is eating meat. And I know that not everyone sees it that way, not everyone agrees with it, but that is our tradition, that we believe when it says, thou shalt not kill, you should not kill. And even if it's not a mandatory rule, even if it's just one of those things that's only recommended, in the kingdom of God, it's very clear that we will not be eating meat. The lion will lie down and eat straw with the ox, from Isaiah. So if that's the way it's going to be, idyllically in the kingdom of God, if it is doable here and now, if you go into the grocery store and you can sustain yourself gloriously without stopping at the meat counter, and in fact the American Cancer Society and the American Medical Association all say that by leaving meat out of your diet, you'll live a longer, healthier, happier life, then I really fail to see, you know, what would be the strenuous objection. And I have talked with this about this to many, many people all over the world, and I've never had serious resistance to this suggestion, because it is the moral high ground. Whether you say we have to do it in our religion, or whether you say it's up to the individual, whether you say it's optional or mandatory, everyone will recognize that it is the moral high ground. And if we are passionate about going to the kingdom of God, and we don't want to stumble, we don't want to hold on to a practice which may cause us to stumble, then we will give this up. And as a Muslim, as a Christian, as a Catholic, we'll all go back to the spiritual world. Okay, strategy. 88% of the people in Utah Valley are LDS. There's a high percentage of students, youthful population. Now, this is a strategy unique to us. Obviously, different Christian temples in different countries and different places are going to note different things about the surrounding environment. But these are the things, the salient points that we've noted, and after that we'll explain how we've organized ourselves and how we've emphasized certain things to fit in with this environment. So 88% of the people are out there, so you're not going to have members. I mean, when I was in India last February, I gave the Sunday feast lecture in Chopadi to 2,000 people. 2,000 people, 1,600 people in the temple room, and then 400 others got it through loudspeakers. And if we had a membership class like this, there would be hundreds and hundreds of people coming every week and signing up and becoming members. There's no doubt about it. But obviously, that's not going to happen in America, where this is basically an indigenously Christian area, and no one reflexively worships Krishna and all that, and traditionally and like that. And we're 88% of the people are LDS. They've made a commitment, and those commitments are substantial. And we don't want to interfere with them. We're not going to disturb anyone. In fact, last time I went to an LDS church, I picked up one of those tithing cards just out of curiosity. And the tithing is the beginning, isn't it? That's just a starting point. And you tithe, and then you have all these other boxes you can check. That what you can do in addition to tithing. Am I not right? That's just the minimum. That's just the minimum. So these are substantial commitments, and they are fantastic commitments. They are great. I wish that all of America was like that. That people were committed in the same way that they are locally. But that leaves us a little bit high and dry as far as making members and making devotees and stuff like that. In fact, we wouldn't even survive if that was our only emphasis. We wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be able to pay the light bill. So we've noticed that it's not going to be a place to make a lot of full-time devotees. We've noticed also that a high percentage of students, that means a transient population, And they're impressionable people, and they're actually, it's part of their curriculum in a lot of cases to learn about what we are. But again, it's not going to be a devotee population. A UFO population, they're pious, they follow and respect spiritual principles, and they love our festivals. That's one thing it doesn't take long to figure out. The BYU kids love to come to our festivals. So taking those things into consideration, we're a tourist attraction. We present ourselves culturally as well as religiously. We offer inducements for people that are interested in the tradition and the culture and the academics of it, as well as the worship, and we recognize that those who are going to be interested in seriously worshiping are going to be a minuscule percentage. But we still want to have some platform whereby everybody, for one reason or another, will come here, take a tour, eat some prasadam, be interested in and learn something about the culture. So whether it be tourism or whether it be festivals, or whatever. And I think we've been successful. We've been successful in exposing lots and lots of people. And you won't find as many people visiting the L.A. temple as you find visiting this temple, or Chicago temple, or New York temple. We have far more people visiting this temple in Spanish Fork, Utah than they have in the Chicago near. And that's because of our strategy. That's because of our choice. Now, they've chosen to emphasize the worship. You see what I'm saying? So they're not getting the tourists. They're not getting the traffic. You see what I'm saying? And because they're in the city, you can't do big festivals and fields with mountain backgrounds and stuff like that. So these are points that are unique to this temple right here. Now, one thing we also notice, again, as I mentioned, meat eating is rife. And a lot of people are really heavily overweight. And there's a lot of depression in the area. I read on the internet that Utah is the number one state for drug addiction, prescription drug addiction. And the number one drug of choice is I had to take some of it last week for a toothache. Yeah, what is it called? Lortab, hydrocodone. I was amazed. I mean, you think of inner cities with all kinds of ethnic populations, people out of work and welfare, and people selling drugs on the corners, New York, Chicago. Utah! Vanilla, white bread, Mormon, Utah is the number one state per capita for drug addiction.
Oh, well, the doctor prescribed it.
Just stay on it, right?
Well, he only prescribed so much and for so long. So that is a problem, and I believe that we do our little bit to depression when we get 15,000 people out there chanting and dancing ecstatically. Now, there's a lot of peer pressure. You shouldn't have to follow your religion because you're worried about what people are going to say. And if you're following your religion, you should cut people slack. You shouldn't criticize people that, oh, I'm following very nicely, and you're not following. The people that are following very nicely, they really need to get into a small group. They really need to get some stuff off their chest because I guarantee you, they're not as good as they present themselves. They've got some deep, dark secrets. And so they need to taste religion. They need to taste spiritual ecstasy by way of getting satisfied and not just comparing. That's not a substitute for religious experience. It's not a substitute. We're not looking at each other. We're looking at God. So we feel that some of the festivals and some of the practices of chanting, as they've made their way into the fabric of Utah Valley, will help ease some of these tensions. That people can experience God more directly, more tangibly, and not just follow their religion of choice because they're afraid of what people will say about them if they're not walking in step. And on the other hand, we're hoping that by our practices and those that are willing to be exposed here, that the people that are following will cut other people some slack and show a little bit more mercy and compassion. Because religion shouldn't run on peer pressure. It should run on familial interaction. And that's what the Bhagavad Gita says. Pratyaksa, by chanting the names of God, you get a direct experience. And then we feel that there's a lot of information, as I mentioned in the beginning, specifics. To know Him is to love Him. The more we know about God, the more we'll love Him. And Jesus, Joseph Smith, Muhammad did not come into the world to make more Christians, more Muslims, or more Mormons. They came to make more God-conscious people. And in the spiritual world, there will not be a Mormon, Muslim, Hindu neighborhood. there'll be people who are in love with God. And so as it says in two of the 13 articles of faith, if there is knowledge, if there is valuable knowledge from another tradition, take advantage of it. So we're not trying to convert people, but we're begging people to check out the Vedas and see what knowledge there is about God that may not be there in your own tradition, and then thereby become a better practitioner of your own religion. When the immigrants come to this country from another country, the single most effective way of trying to ensure that they will be law-abiding citizens once they get their green cards and permanent residency is not by educating about all the laws. The single most effective way is they give them a history, biographies of the founding fathers, Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson. Say, read these, learn about these men, these personalities who founded our country and their ideals, and come back and we'll testify. And when they have done that and they have some respect for the people and the ideals on which, then they are going to more likely follow the laws on their own. So when you understand the personality of Godhead, the more you understand about God as a person, the more that you will automatically be a perfect lady or gentleman. We have a number of kids, troubled and disturbed kids, that come here and offer service Mondays, Thursdays, and Saturdays for years and years. Lightning Peak, Discovery Academy, Journey. They come here and as part of their community service and as their work release program. Some of them would be in jail if they weren't into these programs. And they come here and they learn how to recognize individuality with the animals, gainfully employs them. And I think when they just see us and see how focused we are and see how enthused they are, they have to think, they have to go back and check their preconceived notions. And hopefully, of all the hundreds and thousands of kids that have come through here on work projects, most of these are six-week programs. They go in for 6 weeks and then they graduate. And then maybe they mess up again and go to jail, maybe they don't. But hundreds and hundreds have come through here. And we really believe that we've positively influenced the life course of a lot of those. When you're young and you're going this way, even the slightest, if you can change even 2%, an angle of 2%, it means that when they're 40 or 30, they're going to be here instead of here. See what I'm saying? So if you can just give them a little kernel of knowledge, a little bit of love of life, a little bit more of a positive attitude, you don't have to change them a lot. But if you just change them a little bit, just alter their direction, even infinitesimally, it'll put them here 20 years later instead of here. And we think that's worth continuing. Prabhupada, again, emphasizing the local temples. He says, I've not got much faith in centralized management. I never wanted any of my temples dependent on others. Our main business is to train up men to be self-sufficient and competent in many ways to carry on the preaching work, not to make them into specialists or to minimize their responsibility by centralizing everything. If each center must rely upon its own strength to stand, that will be better training ground for the devotees. Hospitality is a key concept. That's another strategy that we do here. Whatever we're doing, and there's certainly many things that we try and stop and receive visitors and guests. We don't consider anything that we're doing is more important than greeting someone at the door and saying, hi, welcome, have you been here before? Would you like to go around on your own? Would you like me to show you? And so on and so forth. So hospitality is a key foundational principle here at this temple. And we have a lot of organized tours, aside from drop-in tours of small groups whom we can accommodate with a 10 or 15 minute tour. We have, on the average, 2.5-3 hour tours for primary school, secondary school, college level. Last year we had 2,881 students come with their teachers, with buses, and they spent an average of 2.5 hours here learning about the culture. There's a small fee involved, but it's really negligible. So this is, again, the tourism. Prabhupada approved of this. We have a temple in West Virginia. It's also a big tourist attraction. Buses pull up on a daily basis. Let me know when I can go to the next one. And these are in the welcome centers, all the freeways. I think there are 5 welcome centers. They're interstates that you come into Utah by. These are in the racks, the information racks. We also have signs on the freeway, attraction signs on the freeways. So again, this is what we talked about in Midgill. The people that come occasionally, the community, regular attenders, the crowd, members of the congregation, maturing members of the committed, and then the people that are actually involved. They're like the core or the lay ministers. The four levels are the membership level, which is a commitment to Krishna and Krishna's family. Prabhupada says in a letter in 1969, the Krishna Conscious Movement is a treatment for reviving the memory that we all belong to Krishna's family. So we are trying to establish a replica of Krishna's family in this material world wherein there's no material activities. And going very fast now because it's 10 to 5. The next level is the maturity level. What are the habits necessary for spiritual growth? And this is from the teachings of Lord Jesus. I'm trying to back up each statement by scripture. See what I'm saying here? Prabhupada says, the execution of duties to attain perfection is known as devotional service. And in maturity, such devotional service becomes love of God, the factual goal of life for every living being. The third level is the ministry level, and it's a commitment to discovering and using God-given gifts and talents and abilities in serving God and others. And here's the scriptural reference. According to your abilities and the occupations in which you are situated, you should engage your service at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead with full confidence and without reservation. Then you will surely be successful in achieving the final objective of your lives. And then the missions level is to share, you know, the good news with everybody. And from the Srimad Bhagavatam, one who has satisfied Krishna and thus attained the Lord's mercy will never be troubled. Lord Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure and he enjoys sharing his spiritual bliss with all living beings. We need only cooperate with the Supreme Lord. If I knew the cure to AIDS and cancer and I didn't share it, that would be criminal. That would be criminal. So if I didn't know, if I knew how everyone could feel freedom from trouble and to feel unlimited pleasure, and I didn't share that, that would be criminal. So it's only natural when we become spiritually mature and start tasting the fruits of faith, that then we want to share those, and that's the fourth level. Go quickly through here. Temples of fellowship. We do not have positions, and we do not elect officials, and we do not vote on issues. We meet every Tuesday morning. Anyone's welcome to come at 8 o'clock. We have an organizational meeting every Tuesday morning from 8 to 9. And we have minutes to carry over. But we do not elect positions, and we do not vote on issues. If we cannot achieve unanimity, we'll pass on it and go on to another thing. Basically, the temple is run by people that have abilities and talents, and they come up and they say, I think I'd like to do this, or I'd like to see this happen. We have funds, we have resources. We'll support you. We'll support you. And we won't make you go to a board and have you make a presentation and have a bunch of fuddy-duddy board of directors, you know, review and overview and approve or disapprove. If you have a passion for something, and you like to see something implemented in here, then you can just go for it. You're it. You're the founder. You're the member. And we do have resources. It's not that you have to fundraise for it and do it. If it's not something exorbitant, if it's reasonable, don't worry. We'll take care of the fundraising part of it. You just go ahead and implement it. Family. We should not be greedy. We should not mix with persons not interested in Krishna. Prabhupada says that's natural. Birds of a feather flock together. In this way, we can make steady progress and maintain our membership in Krishna's family. So we take from each other's association our strengths and weaknesses, and then we go out, we give. We don't take from the world and then introduce the taint here. We don't watch TV and come and say, hey, you know, let me tell you about that great, what Letterman said last night. No. We take from ourselves our spiritual realizations, and then when we go out, we give it. See what I mean? We take and we give. We don't take and give in that direction. We take and give in that direction. So we operate on the basis of relationships and not rules. We are a body, not a business. We are an organism, not an organization. Again, we go on spiritual gifts and not elected offices. People are the ministers, the pastors are the administrators. My Bobby and I, we've been doing so many things for so many years, we'd like to replace ourselves. We're just looking to replace ourselves. Because one way or another, you're going to be replaced. So you might as well find those people that have talents and abilities, work with them, mentor them, and then let it go. And let it go. And they'll end up running that department better than you ever would. My Bobby and I are running things because there's no one else to do it. But we've got so many things on our minds, and we're getting old. So we're just late. We're just aching to replace ourselves. That who can do this, and they can work with us and see the standard up to which we're doing it, which is the only standard at present, but then we're willing to let it go and then betting on the fact that we come back 6 months or a year later and it's being done much, much better than we ever could have done it. So we have to start thinking of the succession, the perpetuation of this temple, because we're old and we need, and again, with the recruitment problem and the new devotees, this is probably a daily concern. It is a daily concern. Not an hour goes by, I don't think, and people are also, people that have donated here, people that love this temple, people that find their spirit, they're also thinking, what's going to happen when Chirun and Bhai Bhavi are gone? So it's a crucial issue, and we need maybe not one or two people to step up, but five or six people who are local and who want to ensure that this perpetuates itself in the local area. Otherwise, we just don't know what's going to happen when we leave. And even while we're here, if we're starving, we can't feed you. If we're doing so many things that we can't be spiritually tuned, then you don't see us as spiritual personalities, spiritual authorities. We're just harried like everybody else. See what I'm saying? So stepping up and taking some responsibilities means that we can feed ourselves. Like in the last 6 months, I've been able to spend Mondays at the library preparing the Sunday lectures, and it has been a godsend. It has actually been a god. I spend Monday, I talk with God, I read the scriptures, I think about what the message is going to be, and it just fills me up. It just fills me up to bursting. And without that, I don't know where I'd be. You know, I'd just be another person with too many things on my mind. See what I'm saying? So we're thinking of being spiritual leaders that are needed here, and then we're also thinking of perpetuating that too. Moving right along here, and this is it, and we're just, it's 4:59. So we're going to give these to you. You're under no obligation to sign them, but you can take them home, look at them. If you like it, you can sign them now and become a committed member. These are the covenants, and they're further detailed here. Otherwise, we are glad you came. We would like everybody to take this class. And do you think it was worth your time, whether you become a member or not?
Yes.
Just to get the information and see where we're coming from and all? Mm-hmm. So I'm completely satisfied. I'm not here to do a gotcha program. You know what I'm saying? Like I said many times, if you're LDS and you're giving 10% and you're committed there, I'm completely happy. But I just want you to get the best that you can for your lives, and as Krishna consciousness can be part of that, then that's great. So thanks very much for coming. We'll give you these, and again, you do with them whatever you so desire. I asked for questions, but right now I got to run up to the temple and set all this up again.
Very well.
If I sign the paper, who do I give it to? Or just leave
it? I'll take it, and then what I do is I frame it and give it back to you. Tuesday nights, whether you sign the paper or not, Tuesday nights you're certainly welcome to come to the various lifestyle classes. They start at 6:15, and people who have attended have really enjoyed them. If you want to do it on another night, I would be glad to accommodate you. And we'll also have these up on the website.
Is it an hour
or
2 hours
on Tuesday? It's a little bit more like an hour and a half.
And is it here or is it in the...
We do it here. It's a nice, cozy atmosphere.
Cool.
Yeah.
What is today's date?
What is today's date?
The 6th. You're right. All right, Paul.
All right. All right, Paul. Thanks, Nitya.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And I will get this back to you with my calendar signature and a nice frame.
That's what I appreciate.
Thank you. So glad you came all the way down.
I am too.
You know, we had a few other people that had been saying for the whole month they were coming from there, and then so we'll have to take a miss till next week to the south.
Yeah. I'm really glad you made it too.
Okay, I got so. A sweet book, except it's animals.
What's that?
I got a sweet book, but it's about animals.
Oh, I got that at Sam's Club for my wife for last Christmas.
Is it at all possible that you could back this up? I know you're in a hurry.
I could do it. Sure. Where do
but there is a. There was one thing where it said something. It had a. I think 3 or 4 verses in the Gita that.
Oh yeah, yeah. About.
And I just. At the time, I was wishing I had something to write it down with, but you know, I could
confidence and power and strength.
I could just take a picture of it and then.
I'm sure we have a pen here. If it's towards the beginning, that's a problem.
I like the honey thing.
Which one?
The honey part. When you said it gets larger, you want to get it larger, but smaller.
Yeah. Make it smaller by getting it larger. I was going to say more about that, but I didn't. Oh, there it is. There it is. Yeah. That's it.
There we go. Oh, look out, Savannah.
I can write them down on a piece of paper, too, if you want.
I got it.
Okay.
I got it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm thrilled that you came.
I am, too. Thank you very much.
Yeah, take care.